Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Hello, welcome to the Mile High Hockey Lab podcast, hosted by Mile High Hockey, presented by Mile High. I guess, or featuring Mile High Hockey. All of those things are true. I am your host, Ezra Parter, joined by a bunch of other writers from our staff. All our favorites are here. Everyone who's not here is not a favorite. They just haven't been on the podcast before. as I said, joined by a bunch of folks. Let's introduce ourselves, everybody. I'll start with you, Evan.
Sup. Managing editor, woo. I don't know.
That was great.
That's exactly what I was picturing when I said start with him.
That was great.
Jacob, your sound effect and title, please.
Yeah, just gotta calibrate the sounds to the names, right? So yeah, I'm Jacob. I'm a writer here at MHH.
Whoop 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 whoop. And Jackie.
Hello. You all know who I am. Yeah, that's... I need no introduction.
No introduction needed.
That's right.
And our producer as well, Adrian.
Hootie who, what up?
Hootie who. Now, it's been a while since we've all been on the pod together. I know we have a lot of Avalanche stuff to get to. We're going to talk about Cale Makar. We're going to talk about other injury news. We're going to talk about the deadline, and we're going to talk about some potential trade targets, and we're even going to talk about Martin Kaut again, even though he's not an Av anymore. But before we do, I mean, is everybody doing okay? We haven't had an Avs game in a couple days. Who's going through withdrawals?
Me. Yeah, it's nice to have one day off, but after that, it's like, come on.
Am I supposed to do it? And I watch TV?
Like, right.
I've been watching them the day after the next morning, and now my mornings are like slow and I'm actually doing my day job. It's I don't like it. But yeah, I guess let's get right into it. So Cale Makar is concussed, and he was concussed, and then he played, and then he was concussed again. Do you think that the organization mishandled the situation, or do we not know enough to make that determination? Evan, I'll start with you.
I don't think they mishandled it. It's more so just a really inconvenient, I feel like. I think, actually, first off, I have bad things to say about Jeff Carter that I wish I could share here, but I cannot. Because that's where this kind of all originated, right? You know, obviously Makar is able to finish out, you know, both the Pittsburgh game and also the Blues game. And, you know, the Blues game that Torpochenko, you know, I guess kind of punched to the face, I guess, was more inadvertent than, you know, Carter just going through the head of Makar, right? Someone I'm not as upset about. It's more so just like the storyline continues, right? Like it's mm-hmm. just unfortunately just kind of how it all goes out. And, you know, I think personally, like if Makar was feeling good and was feeling fine and he passed concussion protocol, then I don't see why you don't play him, right? I mean, if he felt that way, then he felt that way and good enough to return against the Blues. But even then, you know, it's just like it's just a disappointment. And I think that's really the best way I can say it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, I mean, he clears protocol. He comes back into the game. That makes total sense. And then a couple days later, the next day he's feeling bad. He sits out a couple more days, comes back after clearing the protocol again, and gets hit again, and doesn't even go into the concussion protocol on the Torpchenko hit. It was just he thought his nose was hurting, so he went to the room to get that checked out because it was bleeding. But it does seem like, I don't know what the solution is, because you can't really say like, okay, a guy has a concussion, well then he has to sit at least 5 days. Like that doesn't work.
That's the thing too with concussions, is that sometimes they don't hit you right away. And mm-hmm. you know,
which was the case.
I'll speak Yeah, I'll speak from personal experience because I've had three concussions and they're not fun, let me tell you. But like the first concussion I got, I was during a soccer game. I got kicked in the face with the ball. It was no fun.
Ooh, yikes.
The first symptom, I finished out the game. I was fine. I didn't start feeling bad until that car drive home. Mm-hmm. And that was, I don't know, probably about an hour after the game had ended, something like that. So could have been the same for Kale. Like it could have been overnight, right?
Right.
And then there's other times where it might hit you instantly, right? I mean, that was my second concussion. I actually got kicked in the face instead of the ball to the face. And like, as soon as I was kicked, I immediately felt dizzy and I immediately felt foggy. Like it just very much depends, right? Like it's not a one size fits all for concussions. So at least it sounds like in this case for Makar that like, you know, he felt fine after like sitting in the quiet room, maybe took, you know, 5-10 minutes to sit in the quiet room, felt okay, was given, I guess, the pass to keep going and keep playing. But you know, that doesn't mean you're never not going to feel symptoms again, maybe later that night or later that, or the next morning that Makar had. Right. So it all just depends. Like it's not really something the Avs could have controlled. And it's just the nature of head injuries in sport as a whole. So there's not really any blame that you can put anywhere except for Jeff Carter, but you know, it's just like, it's just a disappointment. That's all.
Yeah, and I wonder too though, like speaking with experience with concussions too, Evan, like I know like back in the day the tests were pretty like, I don't know, not very involved and probably not very thorough. I imagine that is not the case in a professional organization. So it's like if we're willing to trust this organization with like decisions that involve, you know, young men, I think that trust is something that they've earned. You know, look at how they handled the Bowen Byram situation. Other teams might have pressured him back sooner, you know, maybe given him less of a leash in terms of coming back and then, you know, going back into injured reserve and stuff like that. So I don't think, like you said, Evan, that it's like as big of a deal as people are leading on. A lot of people are upset and say, like, how do you let the best defender in the world get two concussions in 11 days? Well, that's the nature of a head injury, is the mystery of it. And that's why it is taken, you know, very seriously now in the league and in basically every professional league right now. So,
yeah, this isn't like a Tua Tagovailoa coming back in and looking obviously concussed while he's playing. This is somebody who was fine, cleared protocol and came back to play.
Yeah.
NHL handles it differently than
I'd say for me, the only, like, sure, a lot of it is hindsight because you look at like Lehkonen and he went through the protocol. He came back after a week and he's been fine. So I don't have any problem with him, how they handled it the first time it happened, the protocol he went through. Like, I think he could have come back the Minnesota game if you go by like the time he was required to have off. And Kale's always been a lot more cautious with himself than other players. I think you look at certain players clearly push themselves. Like I would count Gerard as one of them, who always seems to come back sooner than anticipated. Like Makar has always been a little bit more cautious and took time. I remember a couple years ago, it just seemed like it went on and on and on. It was like, he's almost coming back, but no, not quite. So I think he is pretty cautious with himself and we'll see how that plays out with his latest return, which he's already back on the ice. But I do feel like this might take longer than people expect. Like, I know there's a lot, oh, is it too early? Should he not be on the ice? That, like, there's no problem with him being on the ice because, like, I've read a lot of new research and it says sitting around is not considered helpful anymore. Mm-hmm. It's doing activity and managing your symptoms through that seems to be more the protocol. So I'm fine with that. It's a matter of when he's actually going to play. And I think that might take longer than people anticipate. But the only problem I have is him playing again in that St. Louis game because it was the third period. They already had the lead. Like that game was over.
Yeah.
And that was his first game back too. Right. So like he hadn't even gone through a full game and recovery after the game. So even though they said it was all about his nose and nobody suspected his head, I mean, I don't really buy that. It's just such an excuse. you know, it gave them an excuse when they were like, we weren't even thinking it was a head injury because he wasn't pulled by the concussion spotter. But then he didn't go through protocol and sit in the quiet room because there wouldn't have been time. The game would have been over.
Right.
So, and they were going by how he said he felt good enough. Like, he's been a guy, like I said, that's been very cautious about his returns in the past. But there was no need for him to take three shifts to finish out that game.
Especially
when I looked it up. It was three shifts. Yeah. It just, to me, that was a little silly. But I also don't think that's why he woke up not feeling good. I don't think it's because he played three shifts and now he has to sit out longer because of it.
Yeah. And like, to double down on that too, Jack, it's like there was nothing to be won. And he already had a delayed reaction to a concussion in the first circumstance. So you almost would have thought that they would have been like, well, it's his nose, but for now, who knows, in the next couple hours, maybe we should just let him go. We have another break, yada, yada, yada. So I agree with you on that, Jackie. Like that, I think people are right to question that decision for sure.
Yeah, it's a little strange to say, oh no, we just thought he got popped in the nose, but no, there's no head injury there. It's like, where do you think his nose is?
And also, like, the idea that nobody considered, like, this guy who just had a concussion is back for one game, got hit in the head. There's no head injury to worry about. Like, the concept there doesn't track at all.
Exactly.
Whether it's
just
true
the
or
reaction
not,
he had too. Like, he was just very much like, whoa, and you just.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think the contact was that extreme for that reaction. So, like, to me, I felt like when he reacted that way, it was like, oh, you know, that kind of, like, bothered him.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, why didn't the concussion spotter pull him? That's the real question.
that too.
I feel like we can ask that question once a week.
Right,
true. We started this talking about how the NHL handles concussions well, and we're already immediately at how is the concussion spotter. Which that's what's so complicated about the whole thing is that from an audience perspective, we can't tell what's right. We can't.
We don't.
And it seems like the medical professional side of it, they can't really either because
everyone's different. That's the problem with concussions is there's no like one standardized way to like really say this is how everyone has to go. Because like you saw with the Lehkonen, you know, stuff, he was good to go in a week, but with Makar, it's lingering and you just don't know. This is still, you know, an unfolding science that we're still learning more and more about every day.
Exactly. So hopefully he recovers quickly and it's not anything that we have to talk about too often for too much longer. What do y'all think? Should teams be required to be more transparent regarding injuries, head injuries specifically, but any injury?
I would love it. It's just silly having to play these games and then all people end up doing is guessing and speculating. And I don't really think that does anybody any good. I don't think it does the team or the player. Like, they didn't even admit Byram had a concussion his whole entire first year.
Right.
Like, he had to have put an article in The Athletic and actually admitted it himself before they even acknowledged what it was. I just think it's silly. It seems like it's just insulting everyone's intelligence. I mean, I understand, like, the players have right to privacy and certain things. Like, they don't have to divulge every little nitty-gritty detail, but it just feels so silly. I hate the way that it is hockey culture and then the Avs take it one step further. It's just like, this is ridiculous. Come on, let's just be honest. You know, like when Landy had another setback, just be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, what does it help? And then everyone's like, what's happening? Where is he? Like, this is the timeline. This is the week he's supposed to be back. I just don't think that it's better for anybody to have to go through that. Just say, like, this is the real timeline. This is the update. And then the same thing, like, they spend half of Bednar's press conference going through it. And I'm sure he gets annoyed about with it, too. Yeah. But if somebody was just gave a clear, concise injury update once a week, that would probably cut out, like, 80% of the questioning.
Yep.
And definitely. So, yeah, I hate it. I definitely think there should be some sort of rules in place, at least for certain, like I said, like a once weekly honest injury update, and then everyone can move on.
Well, and like, if you gamble, not saying I do, not saying I don't, but if you gamble on sports too, like that's a pretty influential thing. Like, one of my buddies, he was super pumped. He's like, oh, I have Cale Makar to score first tonight. I'm like, he's not playing. So you hope, and what happens in that scenario is his bet was just void, And so he just had his money lingering in that transaction until the game was over so that the bet itself could void. So, I mean, there's even some legality in that. Like, we're talking about a betting agency holding on to, say, $20 of somebody else's money for 3 to 4 hours when it's not a viable transaction. So I feel like there's a ton of levels to why they should be more transparent. One, it shields them from criticism, aka this Cale Makar situation. If they could have been, if they were more transparent with his initial concussion, then we would have, you know, I think they would have been able to lay out the timeline of what happened and why, and people wouldn't have as many questions. But it's that lack of communication where people kind of don't give them the benefit of the doubt and just think that they're a win-hungry franchise and that they're willing to do whatever it takes. And I just don't think that's the case. So I think it would just help. And like you said, Jackie, the Bednar stuff, like you said, he's probably so sick of being asked every single week, where's Gabe Landeskog at? How's Gabe Landeskog doing? You know, so I don't know. What do you think of that, Evan?
Well, you know, I mean, we've all been asking that question. I'm sure Bednar has also been asking that question himself, and that's probably why he's been getting frustrated with it, you know? So, I mean, the nice thing is that he's at least started skating on Monday, skated again today. At least today he looked as though he's doing a little more work, like not, he wasn't just going out for a stroll like he was on Monday. It kind of seemed like little more work today. And I saw him shooting some at the end. He was out there for a little bit longer. So, you know, you can only hope that he's going to return soon. And then that Bednar won't get those questions.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that I posed it yesterday in our piece about Landeskog coming back, is that, like, you know, we've been through this already twice already this season of, like, oh, you know, he's coming back, this recovery is going to happen. Oh, wait, no, he had a setback. All right, he'll be back in January. Oh, wait, no, oh, another setback. All right, he'll be back in February. Oh, no, now we don't know. And now it's been rumored mid-March. I know that was the last thing that I saw. But, you know, we just don't really know right now. And that's kind of the beauty of all of this. And to kind of tie it all back together, it's funny because I remember seen on Twitter earlier this week about somebody was trashing SportsCenter Twitter because, you know, of course they follow basketball and do all of that. But it was also like Lonzo Ball is like out with like this huge, like, dynamic situation, da 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 da. And it was like a really long tweet about, like, basically he's just tired and he can't play. Just like, where is that descriptor? Yeah. For hockey injuries, right? Like,
it was heavy legs. That was like my husband's favorite thing when, like, Tulowitzki couldn't play like 20 years ago. It was like, because he had heavy legs. So he always uses that one now. He's like, oh, does McKinnon have heavy legs? I'm like, stop.
That's awesome. Well, like, I noticed, like you said, Evan, like, Landeskog is taking it easy. Ezra, do you think he comes back before the playoffs, in the middle of the rounds of the playoffs, or like right when the playoffs start? What do you think?
I mean, first of all, obviously I don't have any information as to what he's going to do, but I do think with him skating now, that's a much more promising outlook than the previous ones that Evan mentioned, where we had setbacks when we were expecting him back sooner. Now that he's actually on the ice in Denver, and I was hearing speculation that he was on the ice in his other rehab stints, just not in Denver. Mm-hmm. So he's been skating, and he is skating now. I think that's a promising sign. I imagine the team wants to get him back in action before the playoffs actually start, just to get him up to speed. Because missing a whole season, it's not easy to jump in the middle of it, and even in regular season games, to jump in the playoffs. I mean, he's not gonna be 35 goal Gabe Landeskog right away. 40 goal Gabe Landeskog right away. He's going to be a third line player probably to start, and if he works his way back up to the top, that's great. But I would expect to see him work himself back in slowly, probably in some April games. That's my guess.
Okay. Yeah, that's, to me, I feel like that's a reasonable timeline. I want him back, like you said, before the playoffs, for the same reason, especially because he plays that position, you know, like where he's constantly in front of the goalie just getting hacked on. And I think, like, that's a calloused experience. Like, it's not something you can just, like, immediately get used to. You're going to have to kind of wear some of those before the playoffs, and they come in their harshest form when mm-hmm. playoff hockey rolls around. So I agree with that completely.
Yeah, Jacob, what do you think?
Yeah, I think they have to bring them back before the playoffs, particularly because, you know, you look at it like if this had happened last year, that opening series against Nashville, that's a way that you could have eased, you know, him back into the lineup. That's not a, you know, they weren't a serious threat. They didn't need Landeskog to win that series. But like, you know, if they've right now, they might face like the Wild in the first round, and that could be, you know, a real grueling playoff series. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, not the environment that you need Landeskog to ramp up in. And so I, you know, the end of their schedule, I've written about this before, it's filled with cupcakes. And I kind of think that they've always looked at the, you know, the back end of the schedule against the San Jose's and the Arizona's and the Montreal's, saying that like, these are the games where we want to get Gabe in against, you know, a bunch of young players, or, you know, teams that are tanking, that are starting beer league guys, trying to get, you know, Connor Bedard. And that's how we're going to ease Landeskog back into it, as opposed to, you know, tossing him into the fire against like Tampa Bay two times in a week in this last stretch. So I'm not too concerned, with how this has unfolded. It's, you know, the initial reports after the surgery was sometime between January and February. So right now we're looking at essentially kind of a month longer than we had initially anticipated, which I don't think is necessarily the end of the world, particularly for a guy like Landeskog. That, you know, he has such a greasy game that I think that as soon as he kind of gets back up to speed, it'll be a lot easier for him to, you know, get back into it, as opposed to a high skilled player like MacKinnon, who might take a week or so to really, like, you know, get his hands back in shape.
Yeah, that makes sense. Go ahead.
I was gonna say that's a good point. I really don't think that they want him to start like right away in the playoffs, and I think last year that wasn't even the plan. I think they had hoped that he could have played in those last maybe like 2 weeks, and then he didn't. And so, right, like this year's playoffs could be a little bit more challenging, and he's been out like basically a year. Like, this whole problem started like pretty much a year ago at this point. So I do think they ideally want him to play and to get reacclimated, and the schedule is a good point. Like, if you're playing teams that maybe aren't trying to win, or with a lot of inexperienced players in those rosters, it could be easier environment for him, which is also why I don't think they wanted to do like the LTIR thing with him, which I'm sure we'll get into later. But so I think it all fits. My thing is like, even if he doesn't feel 100% awesome, I think he's going to try anyway, because if you're not coming back now, you're not coming back. So mm-hmm. I think he's going to maybe push through anything, because there have been so many starts and stops and setbacks. I think he's just going to go for it. And my concern still is kind of like the long term. Like, is this really behind him now after all of this? How is he going to feel after he plays for a certain length of time? So I do feel confident that he will play, but we'll just have to see how he looks, how long he can play for, all of that.
Definitely. Missing a whole year in your 30s screams problem. But
yes.
We'll see. Evan, anything you want to add to this part of the discussion?
No, I mean I think generally speaking, it's the wanting to come back, and you know, maybe rushing back is also just a part of hockey culture, just generally speaking, because you think about that kind of all the time. Is you saw it with Landeskog during the playoffs last year. Didn't take any morning skates, didn't take any practices, but was always there for the game, mm-hmm. pushing through it. You know, mm-hmm. just sticking to hockey culture, and that in itself can be like a bigger discussion that maybe we can have another time. But like, you know, that's just kind of what it is. And I think Jackie kind of leads us into a good point with LTIR stuff and how it all just kind of connects to everything. So
I did want to ask one quick question before we completely move on from Landy. One quick question I probably should have already asked, but do you think that he will or should have like a conditioning stint with the Eagles before he comes back?
That's interesting.
Bad idea.
I don't think so, but it is a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, it does happen. Like, it's not completely unrealistic, especially for players that have missed a lot of time, and to do something short, like, you know, even just a weekend especially when he hasn't played. And I know that the Avs just love to put their regulars back in because their regulars, even at like 80% and rusty, are better than the guys that would replace them. But I think in his, like, Byram had the conditioning stint last year, and yeah, part of it's because he's still a young guy, but
yeah.
I think it was also they needed to get him kind of up to like NHL speed, and I think Landy could be a good candidate for that.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the Byram point because I know he did that last year. I think you would know the answer to this question, Jackie. Would there be any, like, would he have to like pass waivers? How would that work?
No, every team's allowed to do that. So he would still be on the cap. He's still like on the roster, so he doesn't like leave. So no, you don't have to like waive him to get him down. It's obviously limited. I think it's limited to like 2 weeks or five games, something like that. So, and then I think you can ask for an extension because the circumstances are extenuating. I think you can get like another week or something, but it's definitely limited. So, so 1 or 2 weekends is not a problem. And he would be technically on the Avs roster while it's happening.
It would definitely be interesting. I'm just trying to imagine Landeskog in a Eagles jersey right now, and it's
the coolest thing I've ever heard.
I know it would sell out.
That
Budweiser.
Fan base would lose their minds.
Oh yeah,
it would be the highest selling like week of Eagles history.
I know. Yeah. That's what I'm. If that happens, like, because I'm in and around the area right now, I would so go. Like, that'd be awesome to see that and just see the energy in that building.
Well, it's like,
oh, the ticket prices.
I don't know if you guys remember though, like when the not to get too far off topic, but when the Rockies had an AAA affiliate in Colorado Springs called the Sky Sox, a lot of the time guys just like this, big name guys coming back from injuries who just needed to take a lot of hacks, would play for the Sky Sox in Springs. I think even like Troy Tulowitzki at one point, Matt Holliday at one point played for the Sky Sox. So like that would be epic to go up to Vail and see the Avalanche captain, probably captain the Eagles for a night or a few nights. That would be so cool.
That'd be awesome. Yeah,
I don't think you could take Brad Hunt's C though.
I don't know. Give him the third.
No C, give him 3 A's.
It would definitely be fun. It would definitely be a lot of fun. And also, because you mentioned Rockies, shout out Purple Row and their SB Nation covering the Rockies. Go give them a follow because we're going to try and do some things with them to help us survive a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So shout out to them. But anyway, we're way off topic now. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, let's get back on topic. One, there's something we mentioned just briefly right before we derailed. Was the long-term injured reserve situation. Obviously, the Avalanche are dealing with more injuries than just Landeskog and Makar. Eric Johnson is probably done for the season. He's got a broken ankle. Bednar didn't answer directly that he was done for the season, but basically agreed when asked recently. So, and of course, Pavel Francouz is also out now for a couple weeks. He will be back before the end of the season, it looks like. But with EJ, do you expect the Avalanche to be using the LTI, putting him on LTIR to use up cap space heading into the deadline? Jacob, we'll start with you.
I think it depends on how the Avs want to approach it. You know, just a quick Google search says that a broken ankle recovery timeline is 6 to 8 weeks. And so that is effectively does put him down for the rest of the regular season. You know, the optimistic take is that maybe he could return for the final week or two of the season. And so I think that's probably what's in the back of the Avs mind is, do they want to use that, you know, $6 million to go or to free up that $6 million to go, you know, big game hunting out on the trade market? Or if they don't feel like they need to go and get a, you know, make a big deal, maybe they do value the potential that, hey, maybe he comes back like a week early and we can ramp him up for the playoffs, before then. I think that a lot of it depends on how the Avs look at their team as is. I don't think that the EJ injury changes a whole lot as far as, their thinking on the trade market. I think it's just a lot more, is their existing stance, we need to go out and make a splash. And if so, then, you know, forget the hope that EJ might come back for, you know, a few games but before the playoffs, stick him on long-term IR, see if maybe he could play in the playoffs. Because, you know, if not, England's been doing a pretty good job this year as a fill-in for him in the sixth defensive spot.
Yeah.
I agree with you that, like, probably in a perfect world, they'd want EJ to play before the playoffs, but it does get into, like, how much is it worth it if it means that you have this $6 million and they have a lot more flexibility in other areas. Like, I think they would have gotten a lot of scrutiny if they tried to do Landeskog that way, and it would call into the Kucherov thing and yada yada. But, like, because EJ had played, I think, every game up until that point, and it's obviously, I mean, they're all legitimate injuries, but just nobody is going to question that one. Like, he's going to need so much time to skate, to come back. And it's like, the Avs don't really play in LTIR games very much in general, but it seems like this would be the situation for them to do it if they ever were going to. And I don't necessarily mean that, like, changes their strategy, because I don't know. I think you kind of have to, like, know which lane you're in to begin with. And I don't really think they can go big game hunting, like, who's left anyway other than Kane. But I think it frees them up, because then they don't have to watch every single penny that comes in. Like, if they're not going to do LTIR, I don't know if they can add anything. They have, like, $100,000 cap space. Like, they have nothing. So I just and they really have nothing that they can move off of the NHL roster to, like, money in, money out kind of thing. So I think they're just gonna have to do it if they want anything.
Yeah.
And so I think that's just kind of where they're at this point. And especially this season, you can't just assume that you're gonna have no injuries and be able to operate outside of LTIR. Like, you just can't.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see them use that financial flexibility and maybe take on some bad money, or be the broker team and use maybe, like, $2-3 million that way, because it's a way for them to get assets that they could use now or later. But that's not really how they operate, so we'll see.
Yeah, and just to bounce off of that, Jackie, like, typically you don't see the Avs do the whole make a big splash. And I did a live tweet, but I did it before the show today because I figured it'd be better to have a little bit more feedback to kind of react to. And that poll of the week was on our Twitter account, which, everybody go check us out. We're at MHH_lab. That's at MHH_lab. I said the trade deadline is fast approaching. If the Avalanche send EJ to the LTIR, how should they proceed? Option number one, make a splash with a rental. Option number two, bolster depth with re-signable acquisitions. Option number three, find another shutdown defender. Option four, other, and ride in. I'll just bounce it back to you, Ezra, because I don't think you would get to answer otherwise. So what's your answer to this question? And
I actually just went to our Twitter and answered on the poll. I'd say bolster depth with re-signable players, and I think that does it's interesting the way you phrase it, because I think that kind of covers the acquire shutdown D for me. Like, that's the depth that I want to add thing. As a defenseman. Okay. And a defenseman and a winger is what I would add, a middle six winger if you can. And I don't really care if they're re-signable, honestly. But I do think that putting EJ on LTIR is necessary to do that. Because, like Jackie was saying, there's no money without that. The Avs weren't able to accrue cap space leading up to the deadline like they did last year to make all the trades they did last year possible, because they've had to have people on LTIR to make things work during the season with all the injuries that they've had. So there's not much money to work with. EJ has to go to LTIR if they're going to bring in anybody who's got any kind of contract, really. And I think that's the way to go. I think a guy like, we can get into more details of
yeah, we'll get there
later in the show, but that's what I'm thinking.
Let me give you the results real quick. So
yeah, great.
Out of 304 votes, we had 45% say make a splash with the rental. Seems like the emotional selection. Bolster depth at 33%, acquire shutdown D at 17%, and 5% other. Some of those write-ins were absolutely should try to bring Luke Shen and Nick Bonino in as rentals. Help solidify bottom six. Bonino can help with PK. I don't know about the Bonino one.
No.
middle six forward. You just said that they can keep past this year and an NHL defenseman so they don't have to play McDermott or England in the playoffs. That sounds almost exactly like what you just said, pretty much. Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. I don't have a problem playing England, but
me either.
But other than that, yes. I think England had some pretty high profile mistakes that people are focused on, but and that makes sense. But he's really tamped those down, and I like his play. And listen, this is hard for me to say, but Curtis McDermott has been playing within himself lately, and it's like he's okay.
Yeah.
If he's not headhunting, if he's not like overreaching, he has like one brutal turnover a game, and mm-hmm. and every time that happens, I'm like, let's get him out of there.
Yeah. Like...
say it again. Sorry.
Say that turnover in the Tampa game is just burned into my memory.
That one was so bad. And I want to be clear, like England is the guy I'm okay with. McDermott, I do want to, but both of them are like, they're doing their jobs lately. I wrote it in the weekly grades recently. I was like ready to say Curtis McDermott deserves some praise this week, and then he had that Tampa turnover. So,
good thing your thumb was just over the button.
Be like, okay, I'm wrong. This guy's okay, and then he was terrible. Yeah, I think England deserves more praise than he's getting recently.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know, Evan, what do you think of those results? I feel like everybody wants to see, I mean, maybe not everybody, but some want to see a guy like Kane in an Avalanche sweater, but that's like NHL, that's like La La Land stuff, don't you think?
Yeah, right, that is, no. that's stuff you do in video games.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah, and that's why I'm with Ezra in the, you know, acquire a depth player, probably. Like I said, well, we'll get into that more. I know I just had a piece come out about it earlier this morning.
You got plenty to say.
That I really like. So we'll get into more of that later, but that's where I'll leave it for now for that. Yeah. Just get a depth guy. I think that's just really what will help the Avs, at least right now in this moment.
And Jackie, does losing EJ exacerbate the need for a depth defender kind of in your mind?
Yes and no. I could see to them because they always seem to want to have good defensive depth, at least in quantity, and they know that there's like nothing else on the Eagles. So not counting Brad Hunt, like they're comfortable bringing him back, but anybody that had been on the Eagles, let's just say,
right?
So you've got Brad Hunt, you've got England, you know that they are comfortable using McDermott in some capacity. So is that enough? And I'd say yes. And it's like there's guys out there like Jack Johnson they could bring back, some other, you know, maybe like a Kulikov. And then the question is, how much better are they really? Like, is Jack Johnson that much better than England?
Right.
And they didn't play Jack Johnson much in the playoffs last year. You played like 7-8 minutes a night. You know, could you get that out of England and still feel comfortable? My answer would be yes. I'm not exactly sure that their answer is yes, but yeah, it just doesn't seem the year that they really need to spend in that direction. It seems like a very likely move that they would make, but it does also feel redundant.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I think we've talked a little bit here about the potential of making a big splash. And obviously that's what people responding to our poll wanted. But Evan, let's get into what you wrote a little bit, because yeah. I don't really see that there's a lot out there as an option. Obviously, Horvat was a discussion with EJ on our IR. Maybe that would have been possible, but he's gone. O'Reilly's gone. Personally, I'm fine with that. I didn't think either one of them made a lot of sense. Right. But who did you identify in your piece, Evan?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think kind of the first place to start is that, you know, we've already kind of touched on it already, is that assets are you know, thin already with the Avs. It's going to be hard to make trades. And the really main reason why this is, you know, coming up, especially now in the first place, is because of EJ going possibly on LTIR,
right,
and missing the rest of the season. Otherwise, I don't think the Avs would be doing much of anything at all, except if it was a straight player swap during this trade deadline. But, you know, as you already said, there had been discussions and linkages with Horvat, with O'Reilly, but both of them are now off the board. Jonathan Toews was there for a little bit too, but he's, you know, dealing with long COVID stuff, which, you know, first off, obviously get well soon. Health is the most important thing. That really, really sucks for the Blackhawks captain. So it, you know, it's been announced that he's not going anywhere. So really that leaves only like the two, I guess, big splash players left for the Avs, and that was Patrick Kane and Sean Monahan. Monahan, he is dealt with injuries all year long. Talking to Habs people, they don't even know when he's coming back from injury. So like, maybe you could even count him off the board right now, yeah, for all we know. Yeah, and I don't really have interest in that either. And the same kind of goes for Patrick Kane. Like, yeah, it'd be really awesome. It would definitely be really weird to see him in an Avs jersey and not a Blackhawks jersey. And so, you know, I don't see that happening either. I mean, his cap hit to, let me look at my piece. I'm pretty sure it's like 10 and a half or something like that.
Yeah.
Really, really high.
It'd have to be a three-team trade, basically, because somebody would have to take on some of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Minnesota just did for Toronto.
Exactly. Well, at least it's prorated. I mean, it depends how much room they had, because at least it's prorated.
True.
So then if you're looking at 5.25 prorated, or if they'd have to retain too. And then with the proration, I think they could make it work. But yeah, it's still like a huge number to fit in, and there could be some shenanigans.
Not to mention, that might be kind of distracting, right? Like it might.
I do think too, like it'd be everything about like, oh, Kane's never played anywhere else. And it would be fun, but yeah, as Evan was describing it, it would be fun to a point, but then at the other point it'd be like, it's not about him, it's about the Avs.
Right.
It's about the guys that have earned the right to carry the day. And McKinnon, Makar, Rantanen, and like, we don't need a Patrick Kane.
Yeah. And you actually lead on to my next point really greatly, Jackie, because the guys that I had listed, and like, you know, I don't know, we've discussed it already in here at least a little bit, are some of the guys that I think the Avs should be looking at to bring in there. So I listed out five in the article. I'm going to talk about four of them and then talk about a fifth one that is not on this list. So Nick Bjugstad from the Coyotes, I think he would be a great fit. You know, 13 goals, 10 assists this year. With Arizona, struggling, of course, you know, people might be interested in him, and I hope the Avs are. His cap hit's only 900K. He's a UFA at the end of this season. Like, I'm
yeah, it hits all the boxes.
Chris McFarland. I know, like it hits the boxes. That it would be so great.
It's such a repeat of the Nico Sturm move. Just a big body who plays well, who can move, who can add some value. I think he's a better player than Nico Sturm, but I think that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be the hope too, is that he would, you know, turn out a little bit better than Nico Sturm, and then Nico wouldn't be stuck in, I think, San Jose, right, where he's at now. So,
he's making good money, good for him.
Yeah, he got paid.
That's true. What you get when you win the cup, Jackie? You know, you're gonna like this. Ivan Barbashev. I know that you've been a big person to, you know, yelling from the rooftops to bring him over. I will also agree with that. Again, another depth piece. The Blues are selling off. They've already sold off Tarasenko. They've already sold off O'Reilly. Why not get Barbashev?
Question.
His cap's a little bit higher. Yeah.
Will the Blues ever trade inside the division, though? That's
they're not going to do the Avs any favors, but at least like the big names are out. Like at that point, they're just trying to move their depth guys. Like, are you really going to
take Barbashev?
Yeah, I got you. For a rental, I think they would.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Blues are already done playing the Avs this season. Yeah. So,
good point.
Yeah. You know, it maybe, but you do bring up a good point about that. His cap hit is a little bit higher. It's $2.25 million. So that would be, you know, you'd have to work around that at least.
That's
a little
still
bit
affordable,
more,
I'd say.
I do worry a little bit how he's kind of become the best of the what's left over. I think he might. I've heard the Blues want like a second and then like a decent prospect for him, which the Avs obviously don't have. Like, sure, they have their 2025 second, but another team out there is going to be able to offer either this or next year draft capital. So they're not going to be in the race if he's really going to fetch a second. So I do worry that he's become a tad bit more expensive, but he's not one of those grit, you know, big reputation guys. Let's be honest, some Russians still sometimes can have their, maybe not every GM out there is a huge fan of Russians. And so that could limit his market. And so I think he's a guy where if the market doesn't materialize like the Blues are hoping, and he's not one of the first guys on the list, and he starts to linger, then I think he'd be a great fit. But if they can really get that second for him, then like, there's no way the Avs are going to do it.
Yeah. And so, you know, it all kind of comes back to the same issue of the Avs don't have a lot to, you know, give out and make trades, right? Which also actually on that front too, just don't trade away the first round pick.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement. It's just not worth it. The rentals aren't worth it. Kane's not worth it. Unless they can get a deal out there, you know, let's say Timo Meier is probably like the That's real the big guy, fish. Right?
Yeah.
Sure. But or something, any good young player that they're gonna sign long term. So I wouldn't say it's like untouchable because there's you can definitely come up with a scenario, but just yeah.
Timo Meier
not gonna
would,
burn it.
Yeah, Timo Meier would almost require a first. He'd almost require probably a guy like Newhook
somebody
or Confer,
else.
And a couple more picks or a prospect too. So like that's probably not in the Avalanche best interest. One of the guys that I put out on like I was doing a bunch of mock trades on Cap Friendly just to be a dork. And I did one for Luke Shen. I probably gave too much for him in my Cap Friendly trade. I think I did a second and Shane. So, like, I think you could probably take Shane off altogether and maybe get him just for a second. Luke Shen with Josh Manson would be pretty cool, I think, in terms of, like, a complete shutdown line. What do you think of that, Ezra?
Well, I think that that's too rich for me. For a second is too much for me.
So
Luke
a third?
Shen.
Would you do a third?
I could get behind a third.
Because that's their asking price, apparently, is a third, what I've heard.
I think they need to keep those if they ever want to do a Lehkonen type of Taze type of deal anyway. Like, that's the stuff you need to keep around to even be shopping in that kind of aisle. And
well, because for Lehkonen, it was a second in Barron, right?
Right. Yeah. So they have the 2025 second and third, and it's like, yes, they could move them this year, but they just would be so devalued. And like, that's the only thing they're going to have to be able to kind of do that RFA shopping in that's the fair. Future.
Yeah.
And so for me, I really don't want to see those picks go unless it's for like that type of deal where they're getting a young player and they're going to be able to keep him. So they just have to be so careful with everything right now, I think.
And I just don't see Shen as that big of an upgrade on an Englund.
Okay.
He is more of a commodity than England, and that's why he's
sought after,
you know, a popular ad right now. But I feel like the defense market is broken. Like what we're seeing with like Vlad Gavrikov, and obviously we've seen it in the past couple of deadlines with all these other guys that went for crazy. Ben Chiarot, the other guy from Columbus who went to Tampa, whose name I'm forgetting right now. I think I want to stay out of that and just go with the depth at defense just in case of an injury, but not anybody who's being talked about because they're going to cost way more than they're worth. It happens every year, and I'd stay way out of that market.
Premium.
Definitely. Yeah. And we've seen that with Jacob Chychrun, right? He's been out of the lineup now for 2 weeks, you know, supposedly for a trade. It seemed like that he was going to the Kings, and now it's just like nobody knows, right? So, you know, but, you know. Jacob Chychrun is not on my list. He's not coming to the Avs. I don't see that.
No,
he's not. But he is somebody who, like, if for some reason he was coming to the Avs for a reasonable price, I'd be cool with. That's somebody on the defense market that's different. Guys who are third pair guys who are not going to do much, I have no interest in that.
Yeah. And then, you know, back to more Coyote players. These ones I'll go through quickly. Nick Schmaltz, another Nick on the Coyotes, would be really great. But he's under contract until 2026 with a $5.85 million cap hit. That one, you'd have to have a whole lot more to get him out of Arizona. Arizona is probably going to want to build around him. I don't think that's going to happen. That's kind of a long shot. Jack Johnson, we've already touched on him a little bit. It would be nice, but I don't think so. And I also agree with you, Ezra. I think England has slotted in well. Throw Brad Hunt into that mix too.
Agreed.
You know, I don't think the defensive depth is something that we should be going for now. It was obviously a concern earlier in the year, but I think England and Hunt have proven themselves to feel like that Bednar could be comfortable enough to fall back on them should needed. Now, if McCarr and Taves and Byram, knock on wood, all go down, then maybe you have to do something.
Yes,
right?
You're not
sell the
anyway.
Franchise.
Exactly.
Yeah, which you have to
exactly.
Hold on to your assets and go to next year.
Exactly. So, and then I mentioned Nick Ritchie, but, you know, whatever. I just kind of threw that one out there.
Well, you mentioned Ritchie. What do you think of Henrique? Is he too old and too expensive?
Henrik.
And he also got injured, possibly.
The injury's the concern to me. I didn't really look into Henrik all that much, so I guess I don't have
33-year-old center, 5.5 AAV, and
he's signed for next year. So I get the logic. Like, he's a popular suggestion out there. I understand the logic, because if you get half retained on him, then he's not a second line center, but you could probably feel comfortable saying he's like third line center.
He's kind of like Comfer, like right in between.
And he's successful on the wing this year too, which adds versatility.
Yeah, that's true.
And then he's signed for next year. So that's, if it was just for like a rental thing, I'd be like, no. But when you're talking about, okay, you could have this guy and he'd be making like 2 point whatever for next year. He's somebody you could slot in. Like, they're not getting anybody on the market at that price next year.
Right.
So I see the logic. Like, that does feel like something the Avs would be interested in, like some sort of play like that. But then the question just becomes, then what's the return? Like, I'm not interested in doing a first for that. So then you get back into like, okay, well, what are you going to give up for that? For them retaining for this year and next year, you're going to have to give them something, you know. Are the 2025 picks in play for this? You know, if you don't, is there enough for that? And that's kind of the problem I have. Because I'm not comfortable going there for a first. And if you're not, is a deal workable? Maybe, maybe not. So I'm kind of lukewarm on that idea. It's workable, but I'd really want to know how.
Yeah, I'd agree with that sentiment, I think. So, you know, wait and see, I guess. But then the last guy I want to talk about, I know I've been talking for a long time and people probably want me to shut up.
It's been perfect. I'm going to die after this too.
I was going to say the last person I want to talk about, and, you know, just seen today, were Mika Rantanen's comments on Jesse Puljujärvi.
Interesting.
Which would be, I mean, I had the quotes pulled up on my phone here. So, according to Rantanen, Puljujärvi would fit in with the team. The friends who won the World Junior Gold together stayed in touch during the season. Mikko said, "I've been thinking the exact same thing. You know, I know what a great guy he is. I would welcome him with open arms. It'd be a fresh start for him with a good dressing room and a good support around him. I believe it would definitely work." If I'm not mistaken, Rantanen also said similar things about Lekkonen.
He did.
Before he was traded here, right?
Correct.
So if Rantanen is saying these things and these good things, and, you know, I'm sure these comments are probably going to reach Puljujärvi, if I had to guess.
Oh yeah.
Edmonton's all over the place. It's just like they always are. They're in such a weird spot. And Puljujärvi, I know he was held out of the lineup at least a couple of times earlier this season, just because of, you know, some rumors or something like that. And I think that would also be a great fit for the Avs if they can find a way to make that work. That would be wonderful. Take away from another Western Conference team, take away from a team that is also in the playoff race with you.
He's 24.
Get some more depth, some, like, you know, still pretty young. Like, I think he also checks all the boxes. I don't know exactly what his cap hit is off the top of my head.
It's $3 million. That's kind of the problem.
Yeah,
he has $3 million qualifying.
Ooh,
yeah. So, you know, it almost checks all of the boxes. But, you know, if it's pulled off, if Chris McFarland's able to get on the phone and you know, be able to work some sort of deal out with the Oilers and bring Puljujärvi over, I think that'd be great. I think he'd be a great fit. I don't know what you all think, but, you know, maybe after he retires, Rantanen could be a good scout.
Rantanen just wants more fins, right?
Yeah, he just wants more fins.
Yeah, I love that. But
I don't think it's ever been in question that he's not like a good guy or whatever. But I mean, sure, if Rantanen vouches that he'd fit in good, I mean, that's cool. But like, I figure he'd be kind of positive just about anybody that he knows well. But the Puljujärvi one's tough for me. Like, I feel like the deadline is for known quantities. Like, teams are getting like guys that PK and take faceoffs and have been in the playoffs and have produced in the playoffs, or big names. And, you know, you're like buying reputation basically. And right now his reputation is pretty not good. Mm-hmm. So it just, I don't see them, like, I could see them signing Pleury if it's like late August and nobody signed him and take a flyer on him, and then he's like their project for the year. I just don't think that they are going to take on a project right now, especially that cap hit. And then if it works out, then you got to give him a $3 million qualifying offer. And it's like, yeah, but he could sign an extension for less. But then you got to sign him an extension with term and blah, blah, blah. So
when he already went to arbitration, right? That's how he got the $3 million qualifying offer, if I remember correct.
I don't remember exactly his situation. Maybe because he did go back to Finland, and you know, that was part of the situation too. So I don't know. I mean, he just really doesn't produce much, and I know his fans say it's because of his usage, and we've been down that road, and we have plenty of guys on our team that don't produce. And you know, I think everybody should get a fresh start because you never know. But it depends. Like, what do you want to pay for a fresh start? Right. You want to pay the $3 million, and they're about to waive him because they're getting so desperate. Well, I think he'd clear waivers. I don't think anybody wants to pay him $3 million.
No,
I can't imagine he'd clear waivers, but maybe I do agree with you completely. I think like taking a flyer on him next year makes a ton of sense, and bringing him in right now is a little dicier. I'd love to see him hit waivers. I would make that claim, I think.
I think I would too. The thing that worries me about Puljujarvi is that, you know, I've seen some people compare him to Nichushkin, and that, you know, his top 10 pick hasn't really done much offensively. But if you look at, you know, his defensive metrics, he's got some good, you know, good numbers. And so some people think that he could be a, you know, a similar reclamation project. But, you know, for a team like Edmonton that is just so desperate to find any type of defensive cohesion, like anybody who can just play defense, period, and, you know, guard the leads that, you know, McDavid is able to get for that team, if they're just going to outright release him, like, you know, how much value does he really have? Because a team like Edmonton, I mean, you would figure that, like, hey, if this guy is, you know, a solid bottom six type who can play some decent defense, that isn't that a type of guy that Edmonton needs right now?
And but so, they're so old school. Like, if that guy was 33 years old, they'd be all over.
That's a good point.
But
because
he's a failed. Yeah.
If he didn't wear a shield.
The Edmonton dysfunction into that too.
they're very old school. Yeah. Like they want their defensive guys to be like big and old and lead in hits and block shots and all that stuff. Like, he's a failed third overall pick. And so, and we see how that goes. Like, when you don't meet expectations and you never know. And it's true, he could be another Nuke. He could be another Yakupov. Like, there's other ones that haven't made it that
good
were
point.
High picks. Leah Sanderson, like Kravtsov is in the same situation. Like, these teams don't want to just outright get rid of these guys, but it's like they also really don't have any value either. Well, like, their pedigree is their only value. And so they end up getting traded for each other because then it's kind of like, well,
you try.
Yeah, exactly. You're kind of getting the same box in return, and so you're just kind of hoping. Like, Nuke was basically a miracle. I don't think that's ever happening again.
Yeah, no.
But
it's also the only way to do it, because you got him for $850,000 for a year, not $3 million. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
exactly. Right, exactly. And so I just think, like, I definitely think he's worthy of a fresh start, but I think it's just going to have to come in that avenue.
Yeah.
The Oilers are just going to have to suck it up and like release him or whatever, just not sign him, because you can only hold on to hope for that for so long. And so like, I wouldn't mind trying it. Like, sure, it's worth trying it every year, but then you're also doing it at the expense of like guys you're allegedly developing, and you know, they're not going to get another Nuke. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just, it's kind of a tough situation.
I don't know. Just a thought. I think if the Avs do any big move, I feel like Puljujarvi might be the biggest one.
I agree with that. I don't think
that'd be the farthest they'd go. That's the farthest I see him go.
The other name I want to throw out there that would be kind of a big move in a similar vein would be Jacob Virana. You guys have any interest in that?
Yeah.
I love
that's
his
an
play
interesting
style.
One. I would love
the fit.
Because he's had the issues that he's had, the player assistance. I think they have said it's substance abuse.
Yeah.
So we just don't know.
It's rough.
I mean, it really would have to just depend on what his situation is, how he's doing. That's just nothing any of us on the outside could tell. I know that Detroit just called him up and showcasing him, but I see the appeal because he can put the puck in the back of the net. He can play well at 5-on-5, which is what the Avs are desperately needing.
He's kind of the Andre Burakovsky replacement that the team seems like it needs, that depth scoring guy who can just fill up the net when he gets going. I think it'd be cool. I think it'd be expensive, but I think it'd be cool.
Well, he's the 13th overall pick in 2014. So, like, it's crazy how many first-round picks we're talking about today in terms of, like, being not what they were expected to be. And because of that, somehow they're trade targets, right? So that goes to show, like, what getting drafted high will do for your entire career. And just to kind of segue that, I know, Jackie, you have a lot to say about how the Martin Kaut situation ended. He's a high draft pick for the Avalanche that just didn't shake out. It's according to the comments, which I read the entire quote from Martin Kaut, and I think there was some extrapolating done. I don't think he actually said, like, I asked for a trade in my draft year. Like, that's not the case. He said he asked for a trade 5 different times. We don't know the time frame. Nonetheless, what do you think of his comments, Jackie, and how do you feel about how the situation ended with Kaut?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think those got read in a little bit too much. I don't think there's any way that he asked for a trade after he was drafted. I mean, he agreed to come over and sign a 5-year ELC and play in the AHL. Like, he was definitely not against the organization. And, you know, he's still working his way through learning English. Like, I think he gets taken, like, very literally in what he says sometimes. Like people love to talk about what he said after training camp about it. Like, this was like his last chance, and it meant that like he was giving up on hockey or just some other just ridiculous things. And it's like he's not trying to say these things, you know. He might just not quite have the words to put things in other ways that maybe some North Americans would. So
agreed.
I think, you know, it's just easier to like read into what he's saying. And I watched the interview too, and So it doesn't surprise me to ask for a trade. Actually, wouldn't surprise me if a lot of the Avs prospects asked for a trade. Like, you know, how does Shane Bowers feel?
Yeah, those forwards.
And we know that his counterpart, Ryan Merkley, had asked for a trade, and it was such a bad situation, he actually sat at home over it. So,
wow.
You know, I don't think anyone should be throwing stones at Kaut because he asked for a trade.
Well, I feel like also on the other side of that, like the organization can't really be, you can't say like, oh, why didn't they get rid of him sooner? Well, it's like they put him on waivers twice. So, and I know that stipulations to his contract that might have swayed people, like he would have had to have played in the NHL right away. But still, he was available twice. And then they finally got him out to a place that both guys needed a change of scenery. So although it took time, I feel like the organization did the right thing by him still.
Yeah, I could see that. But you're right. I mean, once you've cleared waivers, it's a little harder to
have any
value
leverage
there.
Yeah.
So right, you're looking for like, which is what they found exactly, and happened to be the same draft class, 5 picks away from each other, whatever it is. So it goes back to that same like pedigree, you know, like for like. Mm-hmm. But as far as him like asking, so. And then he goes on to say it was because he was playing with defensemen on his line, which is true, and that it's hard on a contender to really break into those higher lines, which is also very true.
He also played a lot with Newhook, though.
He did get his chances. I mean, it's not like he got no chance. I mean, that is true. He did play with Newhook and Erod, but that line was kind of dysfunctional. Like, there's a reason why Newhook and Erod are not playing together right now.
Yeah.
But true, it's not like he didn't get a chance this year. I think this is the year that you could finally say like, okay, he did get it, like 30 games, the majority of the season to that point. But they still couldn't make it work. And so I agree with the fresh start and moving him, but I can also see the frustrations. I mean, he really did play with McDonald and McDermott as well. And, and 4 and 5 minutes, a lot of games. And, I also wonder if it goes back to when they didn't invite him after his second year, and that was his first call up, and he played so well right before the COVID shutdown, and then they didn't invite him to the Edmonton bubble. Like, it wasn't even that, and it's because if he'd played one more game, it would have burned his ELC, and everyone thought that meant they valued him so much, and they were just protecting him, but like they didn't even bring him. Like, it's one thing bring him and then decide, right? Yeah. I mean, they brought Bowers for goodness sake. Yeah. And they definitely were not going to play him under any circumstances. So, you know, if he got any bad feelings from the organization, I could see it could have been after that. And I think he would have been justified. And they probably should have moved him then if they didn't really think that he was a great fit for Bednar in the system. And he would have had value because he would have been like 20 years old at that point.
Yeah.
But, it does seem like Sakic liked him. Like, Sakic talked to him personally a lot. So I think Sakic still believed in him is maybe why they really didn't try to get rid of him at that point. And so, but the Avs tend to hold on to their assets a little too long. And I know it's a dance, right? You don't want to just start throwing away young players like the Chicago Blackhawks do. They throw away like every pick that they've drafted. Right. And it's not getting them anywhere. So I get that it's also like a hindsight thing, but they really got to figure out on these guys. Like, if there's no fit, you got to do something before they get waived and then you trade them for other busts, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my thinking of it. But I'm glad that he got the call up. It seems like he's staying in San Jose, at least for now. He probably will stay once they start getting rid of more people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is a chance for him, and I wish him luck.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Lab.